Heather Long joins us now on WGN. Hi, Heather. How are you?
Hey, good to be here.
Do you care to just jump into the end of that conversation and talk about the high cost of college education with us?
Well, University of Illinois is still much more reasonable than many schools in this country, so it's all in perspective.
Or in this city, because are you in Washington, D.C., or are you in New York?
I'm in Washington, D.C. right now, and certainly thinking about a lot of the private institutions here, Georgetown University or George Washington University, for example, much higher sticker cost.
Yeah. I just got a text message from somebody whose kid went to Georgetown, and it cost him an arm and a leg. And when they graduated, the kid went to apply for a job, and the guy interviewing him said, well, let's see. I want to see what a kid from Georgetown can do. And the Georgetown graduate got the job. Maybe not a better education, but a better opportunity to get a job when you graduate. And I think that's what you're really paying for. You know what I mean? I know that's not why we called you. I know that. Heather Long's on the line. She's a Washington Post reporter. And I wanted to talk to you, Heather, as you've talked to us in the past, a little bit about this, in this case, deal that the president is trying to make with Mexico. I'm scratching my head about that because the markets reacted very well yesterday, and they're up a little bit more today. But it seems like the ink is still wet on this. What do we know is going to happen, and do we know if this is a quote-unquote good deal or a bad one?
Yeah, a lot of questions to unpack there. So in the best case scenario, and the reason that the market's really cheering this deal is that this will soon be a deal with Mexico and Canada, and that's really what the market thinks is going to happen. Some of the harder issues were between the U.S. and Mexico, and that's what we saw some resolution on in the announcement yesterday. But obviously, it's not a done deal. Congress has indicated that it doesn't want to sign a deal unless it has Canada involved. And Mexico is sort of backtracking and saying it doesn't want to deal with just the United States. The Mexican leaders also want Canada involved. So, we'll be watching Canada closely here in the next few days. In terms of whether this is a good deal, the reality is we don't have all the details. What was released yesterday were a couple of bullet points, call them talking points. So it's hard to really assess the nitty-gritty of what's going on here. At the end of the day, this deal more than likely will make cars and trucks a little bit more expensive in the United States. But the trade-off there is the hope is that it will save a few more jobs for auto workers in the United States, which tend to be good-paying jobs. The average is $22 an hour in the United States for an auto or auto parts worker. So just like that conversation of how do you pay for college? Well, it starts with people having good enough incomes to be able to make those payments.
And one of the ways that will happen
where
is,
we're at.
And as I understand it, 75% of a car in the United States will have to have U.S. manufactured parts. Is that right?
It's not U.S. I mean, in the deal, it specifies U.S. or Mexican. Again, it's very hard to understand how that works without Canada. The current regulation in NAFTA is 62.5%, but that content coming from anywhere in the three-country zone. So as you all know in Illinois, because a lot of parts are coming from Canada into your home state, it'd be pretty hard to imagine how the auto industry would be able to function if Canada weren't part of that deal.
Well, just talk to me a little bit about this. I'm reading here. It says under the deal, to escape the tariffs, 75% of auto content parts and amenities must be made within the United States or Mexico. That would be a bump from the 62.5% minimum of North American content. So if a car company is making a car in the United States and 74% of the content is from the United States, but say 26% is outside Mexico, Canada, or the United States, then they'd get hit with a tariff, right? Then there'd be a tax on that car, right?
Not exactly. So this is for cars that would be coming across the border from Mexico in the case of the deal, or Canada if they hopefully get Canada on board too. A car that's mostly made in the United States and sold in the United States is not going to be subject to tariffs. Tariffs are really about what's happening at the border.
At the border.
Right. You know, the reality is very few cars are, you know, it's not like the old Model T Ford that we all remember from back in the day.
Right.
That where you have one assembly line and that car is going from start to finish on that one assembly line and in Michigan or Wisconsin or wherever. You know, nowadays parts are coming from all over the world, but particularly from Mexico and Canada. You might get a tire from Canada, you might get an engine from Mexico, and then those parts are shipped to Wisconsin or to Ohio, and then they're put together on the assembly line, and that the final car comes off. So that's really how that 75% threshold would work.
Right.
And
the idea is, though, that we want to make the cars more made in Mexico and America, right? More the component parts.
Yeah, I mean the big, anybody who's gone to buy a car lately knows, or even rented a car, you know, your car is basically turning into a computer. You know, there's more and more screens, there's more and more things that are done automatically for you. I was just in a rental car yesterday, and you know, it bings if you drive outside the lines, or yeah. You know, it has a device to wake you up. I mean, it's pretty phenomenal. The issue is a lot of those more computerized devices going into cars are currently made in South Korea or China or other parts of Asia. So I think a big, you know, part of this renegotiation here, when they're lifting that threshold from 62.5 to 75% made in North America or made in the U.S. and Mexico, is to try to move some of that manufacturing base to the United States and to North America.
Well, do those companies and products exist? Are they simply choosing the less expensive parts from other parts of the world, or do new industries or companies need to crop up here to actually supply these things?
From the company's perspective, they wouldn't be shipping something halfway around the world if it weren't that much cheaper. I think a lot of the hope is that particularly Mexico is also a pretty low-wage manufacturing base, so to maybe move some of that production from Asia to Mexico. And that, again, ultimately helps the United States because there's just way more trade going between the Mexico and U.S. border. You know, United States sells the most of our goods to Canada and the second most to Mexico. We don't sell that much stuff to China. We buy a lot from them. We don't sell much to them. So that's why it's important to keep those relationships good with Canada and Mexico, because at least they're buying our stuff.
But how does this not make a car or any of these things then more expensive? I mean, great for you if you're in Ohio or Illinois and you're making cars, and now more of the stuff has to be manufactured here in Mexico, like you say. And there's also a provision about the wage that you're supposed to earn, and they want that to go up. So hooray for all of us. But don't the consumers ultimately pay for this stuff?
I think you've just hit it on the head, and that's what I said. The biggest impact on anybody listening to this show is going to probably be higher auto prices. You know, the question is how much higher, and is it worth it? And I think if you had a union member or a blue-collar worker on the line, that they would probably say, you know, paying an extra $100, $200, maybe $500 bucks to keep more jobs in the United States and more middle-class lifestyles, you know, maybe that is worth it. So that's the trade-off that's being asked.
I wonder if that'll come around and bite you in the butt, though, because then people, in fact, won't buy the kinds of cars we're talking about. They'll say, skip it, I'll buy a cheaper car that might not be made in the United States. But I guess the idea is that that's going to get hit with a tariff. We're going to tax that other car, so no cars are going to be cheap. Am I reading the landscape right on that?
I think you're gaming it out about right. So at the moment, if you're Ford or whatever, if you made the car in, I don't know, Jamaica and shipped it over, maybe Jamaica's not the best example, but if you made it in a country where we have a most favored nation trading status with, like Germany or Japan, that car would only be subject to a very low tariff rate of about 2.5%. So, you know, you could just skirt this whole, you could say, look, this new NAFTA regulation or whatever you want to call it is way too onerous. I'm just going to make my car fully in Mexico and ship it across the border and pay your little 2.5% tariff. So that's why the Trump administration, and President Trump alluded to this yesterday, said that, well, what we're also going to do is potentially put a 25% tariff on foreign cars. So that would be his big stick to pound these auto companies to say, sorry, you got to make it here or it's going to cost.
So your Mercedes, your Lexus, some of those brands, I mean, I know I don't know where all of these things are made. I know what the nameplate means, but maybe some luxury cars or some foreign cars would become more expensive. Is that what would happen, Heather?
Yeah, it's really funny. I mean, let's just say all of this went into effect, which is still a big if. But at the moment, say BMW is making a lot of their cars sold in the United States and South Carolina.
Yeah, right.
So those are made in the United States and sold in the United States, so they wouldn't be subject to the tariff. So suddenly they would look maybe cheaper than you know, a Ford, which is being made, let's say, you know, 26% of it gets made in Mexico.
I've never been very funny. I'm so glad you make that point. I've never been able to resolve, Heather, should I buy an American plate that might be made overseas and employing people overseas, or should I buy a foreign plate that's being made in the United States, but then the profit goes overseas? I don't know which is the most American thing to do. What's the best for my country in terms of buying a car?
you can look at that a lot of different ways. I agree. I think it's I have this battle myself sometimes because some of the quote unquote American brands that I've driven, you can see that it's been made or many of the parts are coming from overseas. So is that a more American car than something that's actually been put together and has fewer overseas parts? You know, but it has a BMW brand on it. So I don't know. That's why this landscape has become much, much more complicated.
Okay. Heather, by the way, just she writes for the Washington Post, reporting on this, editorializing today. The Wall Street Journal finishes their editorial. We're glad to see Mr. Trump step back from the suicide of a NAFTA withdrawal. But on the public evidence so far, his New Deal is worse than NAFTA. They say we don't know exactly, like you said, what ultimately is going to happen. But if this is what happens, they don't think it's such a great deal. And there's at least a look at some of the things that are in it from Heather Long. You can read her reporting at WashingtonPost.com. Heather, nice to hear your voice again. Thanks for taking our call.
Thank you. Take care.
Yeah, you too.